So, Minister, we've collated some burning questions and critical comments from Singaporeans about public housing.
How do Singaporeans own their flats? If after 99-year lease, the value drops down to zero and they have to return it to government. Feels like getting a BTO flat is like striking lottery. Abolish the resale market and leave speculating to private properties. Can we lower the age for singles to get BTO flats from 35 to 30? Government wants more babies and yet waiting time is so long. How is housing affordable when a lot of it is paid for by retirement funds and loans that take over 20 years to pay off? So he has three kids and his parents to take care of. Government wants us to look after our parents and have more kids, but he's working his socks off and the house is like a sardine can. Well, we get these questions quite a lot. These are genuine concerns that Singaporeans have. It's inevitable because public housing is such a major part of Singapore. It is incumbent on me and my colleagues to keep getting a feel of the pulse of Singaporeans on public housing.
Well, I'm here to kayak around Marina Bay with some of the Canoe Federation athletes.
Good morning.
Well, it's just very therapeutic. You're in touch with nature, but also able to see Singapore from a different perspective. Well, I used to come here as a child, you know. There used to be a Teochew porridge in this area, and then every time we go there, you look out the window, it'd be surrounded by all these boats, and it didn't smell very good. And then all that has transformed over the decades. Marina Bay, once seawater or brackish water, now our freshwater reservoir. Singapore is an island, and the island is a city, and the city is the country. There are not many places in the world like us. It's an island city-state, 733 square kilometers. Very tight land use pressures. It's a challenge that my predecessors have grappled with, and it's my turn to carry this responsibility. For many comparable cities, they have large hinterlands. For us, a lot of the things that the city needs to function, like power plants, incineration plants, military bases, airports, seaports, all of these have to be within the confines of the city and just out of necessity. About 11% of our land is set aside for transport. Industry, commerce, around 12%. Just under 10% for green spaces. And then everything else. 14% of our land is set aside for housing. And yet, 80% of Singaporeans live in public housing. So quite unlike what you see in other countries, public housing is the mainstream. Just behind me around the bend, you have Crawford Heights.
Crawford Heights is the first prime flat launched since we introduced the new flat classification of prime plus and standard. It's in the heart of the city and of course right by the river. So this will be a very, very attractive location. With the prime model, these flats come with more subsidies than flats that are offered in standard parts of Singapore.
But you get tighter restrictions.
Well, Crawford Heights, if you don't build HDB, it will be for private housing. You just look at private condos in this area and the kind of prices they command on the resale market, significantly higher than what you'd see in terms of our launch prices.
Without the Standard Plus and Prime Flat Classification Scheme, it would be challenging for us to launch public housing in areas like this. You can inject HDB in these places, but they'll be Singaporeans who have more means. And over time, the gentrification will worsen. You can say, well, leave these places to the private sector, but that will further exacerbate the stratification of our city in terms of where people live based on their means. You want to make sure that in these very attractive areas, you design your scheme so that it tilts much more in favour of home ownership rather than as an asset or worse as a commodity to be flipped. So this allows us to continue to build public housing on choice locations in Singapore, and that's ensuring that Singapore continues to remain as egalitarian as possible in as many estates as possible.
In the morning when I come, I will ensure that the meeting files are all prepped. I've been with Minister Desmond Lee for 9 years. He handwrite notes pretty often. Initially, I also, wow, how to read? So I tried to look for the content in the document itself. This says, please check background of this case with Housing Division and give me their assessment. Thanks. His calendar is always very full from morning until evening. M&D is a very heavy ministry with a heavy portfolio. You can see him answering emails very late at night, as late as 4 a.m. I would say about 3/4 of his work is related to housing.
As M&D Minister, I oversee 10 agencies. Many of them relate to the planning, stewarding and development of our city.
Hi, morning. How are you?
Good. Later on, 1:30 p.m., there's an external meeting.
That really isn't the typical day, but snippets of it would involve being in the office, be in the forest, meeting social workers, contractors, developers, architects, residents. I think our nation is rather unique that a majority own and live in public housing. Ownership is as high as 90%. In other countries, it's a social safety net only for the lowest income, and even then it's rental. When it comes to residential properties, there is a concept of leasehold. And it's not unique to Singapore, you find it in many other cities as well. Essentially, it is ownership for a duration of time. You own the home for, in the case of Singapore, 99 years or close to one century. Ultimately, having a leasehold structure allows a city like Singapore to constantly rejuvenate. So after a century, we are able to rejuvenate public housing, ensure that it remains accessible and inclusive. Otherwise, if you have HDB flats, especially in very good locations, being owned in perpetuity, it could result in perpetuation of inequalities. HDB incurs deficits every year. Deficits have been growing. We have stepped up our public housing building program, building many more flats. We are building in more choice locations. And we have been giving more grants, giving more subsidies. Public housing is social policy. We spend public resources in order to help Singaporeans own their homes. For HDB, we price our flat based on affordability for different segments of Singaporeans and not to recover costs of land and construction. We also don't charge market rates when we launch our BTO flats. We try to keep our BTO flats to about 25% plus minus of a household's monthly income. Some 8 in 10 first-timers over recent years paid little to no cash when paying for their first HDB flat. They could service their HDB loan almost entirely from their CPF, which means that the earnings in cash, they can take most of it home for their other household expenses and other needs. For those with difficulty owning their homes, we subsidise rental housing for them. Amongst those who are living in our public rental housing, we have a group of families with young children. And so we thought better not just provide rental housing and address just one dimension of the family's needs, but look at the family holistically. And so when young families get into rental housing because of their situation, it comes with the assurance that there will be coordinated social support. Ultimately, to achieve social mobility. And one aspect of that social mobility could include home ownership. We have to continue to plan for the future and not be short-sighted. There are many difficult decisions ranging from property cooling measures to pipeline of public housing to decisions about conservation and development. When there are pressures pulling in different directions, even about deciding whether or not to launch a site as a public housing site, you ultimately have to make a call. Let's take Dover Forest. HDB had been planning for the launch of public housing, and there were concerns about whether or not the green space should be kept or whether it should be developed. Personally, I have a very strong view about conservation, but ultimately I'm the MND Minister and I have to do my job. I have to ensure that we meet Singaporeans' needs and aspirations in housing as best as we can. And ultimately, we revisited the planning for the site, decided to build on half the site and postpone the development of the other half for 10 years to give us time to reassess and to work out the perimeters of a future nature park in the area. So that is the way in which we will plan our city for the future, including public housing estates, with much deeper respect for memories of the past. And I think that strengthens our identity as Singaporeans and makes public housing a lot more meaningful. HDB is the biggest developer in Singapore. At any given time, there can be as many as 150 or more HDB projects being built. And Tengah Estate would be one of those.
Tengah was previously a village. There were many plantations and farms in this area.
So there will be a supermarket, eating house, some dental and medical clinic. So all this will be operational in first quarter next year.
First quarter will be ready.
So we have about 27 rain gardens. We have bioretention.
Bioretention tanks.
Yes, yeah. So all this will, all the rainwater will be channeled and discharged.
When completed, there will be some 30,000 households living in Tengah town. On the right, you see the plantation farmway. This is a concept where you actually have a central spine, a green spine that connects all the communities in Tengah and creates pedestrianised space for people to commune. The master planning for Tengah town started around 2012 and I joined MND in 2013. So in a way, to see it turn from 2D to 3D, I think it's very satisfying. When you're talking about urban planning, you're talking about planning for homes, planning for services, planning for connectivity, planning for infrastructure, planning for the social services, healthcare services.
Does your job ever feel like The Sims?
I used to play SimCity. You know, I used to play Civilization. I must say, it's nothing like that at all. It is not just about moving things around, clicking, adding, deleting and so on. Because you're talking about people's lives, so it is very social in nature. It may seem like urban planning, it may seem like infrastructure, but it's principally driven, not just in the planning and the building, but in the policies that accompany public housing and urban planning. Hi guys. Makan Rini. By 2030, one in four of us will be 65 and above. When I grow old, I want to be able to live with or near my children. They're now teenagers. They are prepared to live with me, I'll be very happy. I see my parents growing older too. They are close to 80. When I was young, I saw my grandmother, you know, with very strong will, and then looking after all of us, and then having a stroke. And then needing a lot of intensive caregiving. So I think for myself and others, future seniors, I think a lot of us are looking for a way to age in familiar surroundings, with amenities and facilities that allow us to navigate home safely. So we need to future-proof our housing for an aging population, but for a young and diverse population as well. There are more and more singles in Singapore. I think that's a trend you see all over the world. So in Singapore, given our land scarcity and resource scarcity, we've had to, in a way, put limits on public housing access on every group. But for singles, we've been making moves along the way, giving them access to two-room flats, enhancing grants. Down the line, we must be prepared to make big moves in order to create space for Singaporeans to live their dreams. Plans like Paya Lebar Air Base relocation that will free up the Paya Lebar Air Base site for housing, jobs, amenities and green spaces. The Greater Southern Waterfront, for which the Keppel Club site will be launched very shortly to provide housing in a very central part of Singapore. We also have Turf City. When the Turf City operations wind up and we are able to use the site for housing, for Singapore, public housing is really national housing. And national housing because 8 in 10 Singaporean households live in homes built by the HDB. There is no natural reason why this should have been so. Because if we had just naturally followed the model of other cities, it would have been a case where government focused on the basics and matters like housing and other things were left to the private sector, left to communities to sort out on their own. And if that was the case, then I don't think we would ever be able to achieve home ownership levels of the proportions and dimensions that you see today. So that is the task of our generation, to be able to use our very limited land and very limited resources, and now with a carbon budget, to be able to embark on this very, very major task over the next few decades of reimagining public housing all over.